This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello and welcome to our latest instalment of Liquidity Talks, live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts, CEO and founder of Planix, a market-leading fintech focused on real-time treasury, liquidity and risk. Now, our topic today is entitled How Banks Navigate Regulatory Interviews with Confidence. So you may be in one soon, you may be needing to prepare for one. If this so, this is the podcast for you. Welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you may be. Anyone in the audience can ask a question as we run through. If you see on the right-hand side of your screen, the comments section, you can put any questions in there and I can take these as we go, or I can take them at the end. And if we have any left over, we'll answer them after the podcast today. If you do ask a question, please let us know who you are and if you possibly can your role so we have some context. Now, today I'm joined by our guest speaker, Steph Henderson-Begg, which indeed her second time on this podcast. So welcome, Steph. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do?
Hello, everybody. Yes, my name is Steph Henderson-Begg. I am the Managing Director of Reg Queen Advisory and have been supporting firms for, gosh, about 15 years now, I think, across all things risk and regulatory focused. My background is that I started in the regulator, supervising a number of banks, building societies, UK and overseas firms, and have been helping firms navigate those situations since then. So very excited to be able to talk about this topic with you today.
Perfect. Now, I do normally talk about football, but we're going to go through that because we did that last time. So I'm going to go straight into the topic today because I've never actually sat in an interview myself. So I'm fascinated to know what happens. So, you know, first up, what do we mean by a regulatory or regulator interview? You know, what is it? What does it cover? And how long does it last? How long is the interrogation, if indeed it's that?
Oh, well, it can vary. So regulators often will go into firms to conduct visits, either in person or through telephone calls or video calls, where they're really trying to get to know the firm, explore topics, find out how things are going. There are often set pieces. So the supervisory review and enhancement process, the SREP, that many of you will probably be very familiar with, that there are set SREPs to set capital or liquidity requirements for banks. So often it will be a SREP focus, but certainly in the UK, it can cover a number of other topics that they might be interested in, from governance, asset quality reviews, board effectiveness, risk management frameworks, corporate plan, you name it. So anything that really falls into that continuous supervisory assessment that they're undertaking. There are also in some areas interviews that you might have to go through to get regulatory approval. The senior managers regime in the UK, but there are analogous pieces elsewhere. And those are sort of more approval interviews that individuals have to go through for set roles. And while some of what I'll talk about, I'm sure, will be applicable to that, it's mainly thinking about those continuous supervision interviews today.
And do regulators, do they normally ask for one once a year, or can they ask for one whenever they want? What's the typical cadence for these interviews?
It really can vary. So some of the large banks will be having meetings pretty much weekly. Some of the smaller deposit takers might be meeting maybe twice a year with their supervision teams. Others will have phone calls every month, and there's a whole host of different frequencies in between. So it really does depend.
No, I've got it. And probably the better the outcome, the more time you'll have before you'll have the next one, I guess.
Yes, it's partly that, and it's partly based on their own risk assessment of you. So if they think that you have a relatively low impact on the financial sector, you're relatively low risk, or that you're relatively easy to resolve or deal with if there is a problem, they tend to leave you alone. Whereas if they think that you're going to have a bigger impact, if there is a risk that crystallise, or that they think that you're on the higher end of risk, absolutely. So that tends to be the main driver of frequency.
But I understand. So look, Steph, you've been in maybe hundreds of these interviews. You've helped prep banks and you've been on all sides. So let's start with maybe what doesn't go so well. So what you say is some of the most common mistakes that bank make, particularly when they prepare for an interview?
Well, I think the most obvious one is under-preparing and not really thinking about what meeting you're going into. And under-preparing can mean that you're not familiar with the documents that they're talking about or the topics that they're talking about. But the flip side of that is that I've seen people over-prepare to the point that they've almost rehearsed scripted answers to certain questions, which invariably won't be the ones that come up. And so they answer the questions that they've prepared for and not the ones that the regulator is asking for. So it is a balance between doing enough to prepare and think through what they're going to be interested in and make sure that you're familiar with that topic, but don't do too much so that you're too scripted on that. The other thing I think people fail to do is think about the bigger picture. So supervision tend to be focused on a number of topics across a firm. I've already mentioned a few of them, ranging from capital and liquidity to governance and, in some areas, conduct risk and compliance and financial crime. And so whilst they might be there for a particular topic, liquidity, they can get distracted and ask questions about other things because they will invariably have a process that they will go through back at their headquarters to think about that broader set of risks. So don't be surprised if they go off topic and, think more broadly about the big picture for your firm when you're talking to them.
Got it. So as I was thinking this through, Steph, I thought that I would think that the regulator would probably want consistent messaging throughout. So now, how can banks build internal alignment ahead of these reviews?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great spot and something that we used to focus on a lot when I was a regulator. Sometimes they will ask the same questions of different individuals or questions that really should be answered in the information that you've already sent to them. And in a way, what they're doing is checking that there is that internal alignment across individuals and between what you have written down and what you actually articulate. So it is really important to make sure that you're all on the same page ahead of any regulatory meeting. And you can achieve that by doing everything from creating sort of like one pages that have a few bullet points, key messages and things that you want to get across. Perhaps running some dry runs or mock interviews is often popular. But as a minimum, just thinking through that likely agenda and the types of things that they're going to want to talk about. I think the other thing that can be helpful, though, in preparing is having a view as to who's going to answer what questions, particularly if you're going in as a group. So there's nothing worse than having one dominant individual who answers everything and the regulators don't hear from anyone else. So maybe have some rules for engagement that you agree in that preparation. Who's going to take the lead on certain topics? How are you going to pass between each other?
Or I guess it's a yes and a no in the same answer from two different people.
It happens, believe me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet it's happened. Oh dear. So, I mean, I guess you can also over prepare as well. It can't be too scripted. You have to know your topic, what you want to say, but you've got to listen to the questions and answer them. It's not just about trying to get through a script and trying to make it end, right?
Yes, absolutely. Don't try and answer questions that you haven't been asked. And a real pitfall actually is answering questions that you don't really know the answer to. So don't be afraid to say, I don't know. It shouldn't be a memory test. I come across many people that are trying to learn the numbers associated with the ILAP or such like. You're not expected to be able to recall information, but being able to say, actually, I would find that information here or it's reported there, can I come back to you, is absolutely fine. And I'd add to this, don't be too nervous about showing some areas of development.
Yeah, exactly.
I think people get very caught up on not wanting to show, you know,
any weakness,
where the skeletons are, perhaps. But actually, regulators want to see that you can self-identify and, you know, put in plans to address issues in your firm. So have a few of those ready to be able to talk about.
You know what? It sounds very much, Steph. My wife used to be a head teacher, and she had an Ofsted every 2 years. So it sounds like an Ofsted interview report where they come in, they inspect you, you prep for it, and then you hope you get a good response at the end because it's so meaningful. It just sounds like that. Ofsted, by the way, for anyone who's not from the UK, is kind of a review that they do at schools, and it's really important. So it just sounds like that.
It does. And actually, I've been in an Ofsted as a school governor, so it is very similar. great analogy. I mean, the point there about the letter, I think financial services firms equally find the same. So that there's something around reading the mood music in those meetings and trying to get a sense for where, you know, where they're going. Sometimes I've come across supervision teams who are incredibly explicit in their thinking, which is very helpful. But other times that letter can feel quite different to the conversation that you've had. So really do try and tune in on the things that they're asking about and explore with them where they're perhaps doing a little bit more digging so that you can understand what their thinking is.
I got it. So it's not just about what was said, it's about what wasn't said and the underlying mood music. And if you're in the, you know, the heart of it, you may not pick that up or see it, I guess.
I think sometimes it can be difficult, particularly when we all come to things with a slightly different viewpoint and experience of the world. And many supervisors will work across lots of different firms. They won't necessarily be a specialist in your particular area. They might have specialties in other topics. And so don't be scared to sort of delve in and ask questions and make sure that you understand the points that they're raising.
Got it. All right. So let's turn to a focus on liquidity risk management. What are regulators typically looking for in this area? Because this is obviously one close to our hearts.
Absolutely. First off, I'd say make sure that you really understand what the different liquidity risks are and can articulate how those are embodied for your firm. And then going on to that next stage of, well, what do you do about it? What's the controls? How do you manage that? And of course, for liquidity, that's going to link into what your funding plan is and perhaps what your management actions and your contingency plans are to be able to address any risks as they arise. So that's sort of like the key piece, is to be able to articulate those liquidity risks, controls and contingencies. Regulators also like to hear a lot about the governance that you go through, particularly in relation to stress testing. How do you go about coming up with scenarios and assumptions? How do you validate those? What sort of challenge do they go through at executive and board level? So that they can really see that it's something that is done across the firm with multiple inputs from multiple areas.
And is there normally a set number or type of stress scenarios that they're looking for, or is that in the eye of the supervisor when they turn up, or can they ask whatever they want to?
Again, it varies, and I feel like I'm saying that a lot today. I mean from the UK perspective, from a liquidity standpoint, the ILAP requires 3 stress scenarios. So idiosyncratic firm specific one, a market-wide type piece like a recessionary event, and a combined scenario where you're sort of overlaying that firm-specific and market-wide stress. For larger banks, tier ones, I mean, they would be expected to have, you know, 6, 7, 8, even more stress scenarios that go in there. And I have seen smaller firms get away with less stress tests for certain documents. So, yeah, it's another one that it really depends on your size and impact on the financial sector.
So one of the things I hear more and more is it's about this control in real time. So show me what happened over the last month, 3 months, 6 months, and liquidity peaks, troughs, risks, but also demonstrate to me that you had control at the moment that happened. Because if you're just reporting to me after the fact, it can happen at any time. So we've heard a lot of banks say, I need to be able to show how I had control. I had it in real time so I could act at the time of the risk. Is that what you're hearing as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to demonstrate that you've got that information available and forward-looking data actually is a big hot topic for regulators. You know, can you project what your liquidity positions are going to be in the next week, month, even up to 3 months ahead of time, where those peaks and troughs are, so that you can do something ahead of time as opposed to it being a surprise to you on the day?
I think we've picked that up over the last year. It's been a movement from 5 years ago, show me what happened. Then it was show me what happened and show me you had control when it happened. Now, what do you think will happen, not just in regular BAU, but with stresses and what you plan to do? So it's not just about looking back, it's the forecast as well.
Absolutely. It's that very proactive important management rather than reactive.
Yeah. Got it. So look, assuming that everything isn't perfect, it doesn't have to be either. You know, how should banks approach identifying and addressing gaps before the interview? What's the best way to do that, Steph?
Yeah. So, I mean, first off, of course, you need to know what the gaps are. And I've already mentioned, don't be worried about showing these. Generally, I think it's a very positive story to tell where you have self-identified that there are some gaps, whether those are regulatory gaps or areas in your risk management and control framework that could be enhanced and improved. So have a view as to what those are. I would caution with, if you're going to talk about them, of course, you need to be prepared to follow up.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about gaps, think about, you know, what are the root causes of those particular gaps? What has happened to let that be an issue? And what's the remediation plan? What are you going to do over coming weeks or months to try and address that issue? So for each of those gaps that you're going to talk about, make sure that you can follow up with those root causes and remediation plans. And of course, if you're going to talk about remediation plans, regulators may well want to see them, see the outputs of them as they go through. So be prepared to show them the fruits of the work that you're doing. I think another thing that's always really interesting on filling gaps is regulators like to know how you know when the work is done, when what you've done has been effective and you can kind of move on. And that's quite a hard question to answer. Often I see firms talking about internal audit reviews or any third party assurance that's gone on to help provide them with comfort that things are working again. But moreover, I find talking about these events where you identify risks ahead of time that are coming your way and doing something about them are great examples of how your control environment, your risk management framework is working. So have some of those, hopefully, to tell them about as well.
Got it. So it's not bad to have gaps. It's about explaining them a remediation plan and then following through with what you say you do to close the gap. That's the important part of it.
Yes, absolutely. And where there have been larger gaps, I always caution firms to be a little bit measured and reserved in how you think about progress. So, things can't be fixed overnight. So don't try and argue that you've dealt with the huge issue that happened 4 weeks ago and life is moving on. Being able to show slow progress, talk about how things are embedding on new processes and how you need to review and evaluate those new processes a little way down the line is really helpful to show regulators that you're thinking about that broader risk.
Sure, got it. So, look, as we know, liquidity isn't straightforward, right? It would be good to hear some effective ways to communicate, you know, complex liquidity data to regulators. Is it storyboarding? Is it verbal? Is it showing things? What's the best way to bring it to life for them?
Yeah. I mean, some of this hopefully is relatively common sense, but I would start from a place of don't be afraid to educate your supervisor. Supervisors often don't come from industry backgrounds. They don't necessarily know and breathe treasury operations in the way that you do. and they certainly won't know your business, your market, your products in the way that you do. So don't be afraid to take the time to go back to basics, talk to your supervision teams about exactly what you do and how you manage that on a day-to-day basis. They can and will ask you to speed up and go into more detail if they're not getting what they want, but in the majority of cases it will really help give you the, you know, the foundation that you need for a positive discussion. So that's my first piece. And then from there, I mean, graphics are always helpful, dashboards, visual aids, and talking in their language. So, you know, put it into LCR, NSFR, inflows and outflows, assumptions. Give them something that they can relate to so that they can engage with the conversation. Storytelling, I think, is always important with regulators. So bring to life with them the process that you go through, whether it is around managing liquidity on a day-to-day basis or formulating stress scenarios and coming up with those, or looking at sort of new ways of working through ALCO or whoever might be approving new policies and procedures. So talk them through the context, impact and actions that you've taken. And back to that first bit, just avoid jargon. There are some bits of jargon that even now I come across treasurers using, and I have to pause and say, what exactly do you mean by that? So try and
talk. They may not think it is jargon. They just use it every day and they think it's, you know, normal words that they use in the bank, but the regulator's not.
Exactly. And the regulators are just as bad at this. There is a lot of regulatory jargon.
Yeah, no, I bet there is. So one of the things I've always thought, I've always thought in these interviews, a bank needs to show, you know, control, leadership, because they're very high pressure events. Is that true? And also, how would you advise a bank to show that, you know, control, leadership, I'm on top of this in these interviews?
Yeah, well, I suppose, first of all, I'd say I think it is important. There's quite a different dynamic to the relationship when a firm is in, I'm going to call it, submissive mode of doing everything the regulators tell them versus that proactive sort of almost level debate mode where you're clarifying answers to questions with them, putting across your views as to why you think this is the appropriate way to do things in your firm. It really changes the relationship and helps give regulators comfort around these points that we've already been talking about, that actually the individuals they're dealing with really know and understand the risks in their firm and are really thinking about what is the most appropriate way to deal with them. So I think, you know, don't be afraid to ask clarification questions of your supervision teams, and don't be afraid to enter into a debate. You know, there's often not a clear-cut answer in risk and regulatory issues. So being able to put forward your view of why things are appropriate, why it's proportionate, why it's the right response for your business is really important. It won't always win the argument, But it shows that you're thinking through and willing to tackle those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about tone from the top staff? So, you know, what role does tone play, transparency? Because ultimately you've got to build trust with the regulator. So I presume that's important. It's not just the people in the room, but it's the tone from the top, how the bank feels holistically about risk and being in these interviews.
Yes, absolutely. You know, that there's something around being open and honest, but recognizing what the, you know, what the key drivers are for the firm as a whole, how the topic that you're discussing relates into that bigger picture for your firm strategically, but also where you are on that risk and regulatory journey. I mean, for leaders, having a willingness to acknowledge where there are issues and thinking about how you can address those, avoid being defensive and evasive. You know, there's nothing worse than somebody being reactive to these problems that have arisen. And frame issues that have arisen as an opportunity for improvement. What have you learned from it? What are you going to take forward? How are you going to make sure that these things don't happen again in future? So I think it's a combination of those things for really building that trust and transparency with your regulators.
Sure. And what about post the interview, apart from a long breath? You know, what should banks think about and do immediately after a regulatory interview?
Well, often regulatory interviews are a number of different events over various days or weeks. So if there are other individuals that are yet to go in and have conversations, it can be really helpful to debrief the rest of the team, capture key takeaways, just so that you can ensure that you've got that consistency of messaging across different groups. And also different individuals and different departments will have a slightly different take on things and a slightly different role in the topics that are being explored. So they will have that opportunity to bring out some of these elements that your interview might not have. So it is quite helpful to be able to share those key takeaways as quickly as possible. Obviously, there's often lots of follow-up. So if there were things that you committed to in the meetings that you were going to share with the regulators at a later date, make sure you've got a full list of those and that you do indeed follow up with those items or meetings, etc., in a timely manner. And then, of course, you need to begin to follow up on what this is. So, you know, get busy on the doing and start preparing for that next meeting.
Got it. Now, we've had a question. It's come on through LinkedIn, so it hasn't appeared on the comment section. And I don't have a name, unfortunately. But it's a good question. It's, you know, how can banks turn regulatory scrutiny into a strategic advantage, if indeed they can? So do you have any views on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing I'd say is that regulatory scrutiny is very common. I often see firms almost go through a cycle whereby they've been in a great place with the regulator and actually that can drive a bit of complacency.
Yeah.
And so it's really common that I come across firms that have had a relatively quiet period for a few years. And for whatever reason, whether it's changes in senior leadership or changes in supervision who look at things slightly differently, or changes in business model, whatever it is, you know, for some reason you've come under greater regulatory scrutiny than you were in the past. So I think that cycle is really, really normal. Because it's a cycle, it does mean that actually there's some steps you can take to try and preempt it and stop it happening. So, you know, don't get complacent, always be horizon scanning, thinking about those enhancements to your risk management framework, those new regulatory and market things that are coming through that regulators are likely to focus on and deal with them. But if you do end up in that sort of hot area of regulatory intervention, you know, use that as a learning curve, you know, take from it, think about how you're going to strengthen your internal processes. Think about how you're going to use it to make sure that you're applying those learnings into other areas of your business. Use it to drive that cultural change and risk awareness to try and ensure that you don't end up in that situation in future.
Got it. And Steph, we are running out of time, but my last question, if you think about an individual that's going into an interview for the first time, what advice would you give to them in helping to prepare for that interview? And is there one piece of advice above all you think is the most important?
I think it's, you know, realise that your supervisor is a human being themselves. So you are having a conversation with a human being, but be prepared, you know, think through from their perspective what that individual is likely to be interested in, the types of things that they're going to want to know about, and be familiar with those topics so that you can really engage in a two-way conversation with them about it.
Got it. Well, look, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. So thanks very, very much, Steph, for joining us today and sharing your views. If you do want any help in this area, do reach out to Steph on LinkedIn. I'm sure if I was going into the interview, I'd like you on my side. So please reach out to Steph. If anyone has any more questions or they come through, don't worry, we will answer them after the event later for you. So that concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. We will put the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Thank you very much. Look out for our next podcast in September after a short summer break. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.